You moved up here. One of the first things you did as a teacher in Prince George, was it UNBC at the time you moved here, University of Northern British Columbia?
No. It was
the College of New
College
Caledonia.
Of New Caledonia.
Yeah. And you were teaching English in a welding class.
Yeah. It was a technical school. We moved into a technical school before they built the college.
And this is 1969?
Yeah, 1969. So our first year here, we taught out of the high school. So we'd start teaching at 3 in the afternoon after the high school was out. So it was a night school. And we were interlopers. The high school people thought, oh, here are these smarty pants academics coming in and taking over the functions that we've provided. And but eventually we all got along and, you know, didn't interrupt their activities at all. But being a night school, we were literally every night 7 to 10 at least, and then a couple of afternoon classes. But in this town, everybody at 9:45 started looking like they needed beer. So you'd finish your classes and head down to the end of the North Bar. So we formed a real tight community of teachers and students. I mean, everybody was just absolutely excited about this college and what we were about to do, because we'd talk and my friend Charlie Boylan said, you know, we've got to get a reading series up here. The Canada Council has a scheme and we can get some readers. And, you know, his wife started a student newspaper, and then Charlie organized a union, and it just went on from there. So it was energy for sure. Because it was new. I mean, you know, we had to do the work. We had to come in and kind of survey the town and the area and then figure out what our function was.
The Canada Council was pretty brand new also, wasn't it?
I'd never heard of this scheme, but the deal was $100 honorarium and airfare. And in those days, you could fly up from Vancouver for $80 return. So, you know, it wasn't a huge investment, but we started. Charlie was actually very active at the beginning with the Canada Council applications, and he had studied with Dorothy Livesay, so he decided to get Dorothy up, and then Al Purdy and Earl Burney. So it was the big names that were easiest to get grants for, obviously, because they'd been around for a long time. So we brought in probably 8 to 10 writers the first year, you know, the top Canadian writers, as they say. We were knocked over because the Purdy reading attracted 500 people, and that was unheard of.
This is, so that, to set the scene, this is 1969 or 1970.
69 and 70.
And you're in a town that is a town built basically on logging and resource extraction, so
right.
Very blue collar.
Pulp mill. Yeah.
And not thinking that the humanities were worth shit, which is, you know, what the culture thinks now. So maybe in some ways they were ahead of their time.
Well, I've had practice in being rejected, so.
that's probably why I'm attracted to your work.
I'm out of here, Jack.
So you're doing this in a blue collar, a very blue collar town, and you're getting 400 people at a poetry reading because people knew that if they knew even the slightest bit about Canadian poetry, they knew that Al Purdy was a guy they had to see.
I have to be honest about this. There was a very popular folk singer in this area. His name was Tom Hawken, and he used to play down at in Barkerville, and he attracted many, many people. And he was also a friend of Charlie Boylan's. So Charlie and I, we'd have, we were sharing offices and so forth. And he says, you know, I don't think we're going to get anybody out for this poetry reading. Why don't I get Tom Hawken to come up and play folk songs, because he's really well known. So I thought, well, that makes sense. And so we contacted Hawken, and he said, yeah, I'll come up. He phoned the day of the gig and said, my fridge has been repossessed. I'm in financial trouble. I can't make it. And etc. So he canceled out. So we go to Vanier Hall, 400 to 500 people, and I said to Charlie, I says, man, I don't know, this. I felt sick. I wanted to escape fast, even though it was a free event. You know, you're still people expecting Tom Hawken, the folk singer, and Al Purdy. So Charlie is very bold and pretty much not afraid of anything. He just got up and said, ladies and gentlemen, Tom Hawken will not be appearing tonight, but we have the great Canadian poet Al Purdy, etc., etc. And Purdy got up, and I remember he says, I'm Al Purdy, I'm just here to read some poems, and I don't have any goddamn go-go dancers with me. So he loosened them up right away. And then he started reading the poems about, you know, Eskimo dogs diving at his shit and homemade beer and, you know, all those classic poems. And he just had that audience absolutely, you know, attentive and with laughter and so forth. So we didn't have anything to worry about with Al Purdy. Maybe another writer, you know, of a different, without that kind of immediacy, might have been a problem for us.
Yeah, it would seem that Purdy would go over well with a blue collar. I mean, yeah. With regular people, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's an autodidact, you know, kind of non-academic guy. He's been in the army, and he said he was demoted to the point where he was saluting ducks or something. So he had a great sense of humor, and people got it immediately. And it's straight-ahead narrative, you know, storytelling poetry, but I have no problem with that. And he subsequently became a great friend of mine, even though our approaches were so much different. And but it was that kind of a relationship where it was unlikely that we would be friends, but we became friends because we teased each other. And one example is that he didn't like the Black Mountain poets, Olson and Creeley. He says, those guys, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I'm really a fan of those guys. I read them. And one day after another reading he gave at a high school, which didn't go over that well, he was downtown with me. We were looking for books in a secondhand bookstore. He was great at it. He had a huge collection of Canadiana. I said, what's wrong, Al? He looked depressed, and he says, oh, it just didn't work out. So I looked at him and I said, when I know what others think of me, I am plunged into loneliness. He says, what the fuck? Did you say that? Who said that? I said, Robert Creeley said that. He says, what's his address, man? That's great. So we would tease each other in that way. Like 10 hours later, I'd nail him on something he'd said, and vice versa. You know, he would say things like, after years of knowing him, he says, Barry, are you still married? And I said, yeah, I am, Al. He said, too bad. Stuff like that. So it was always just a kind of gruff laughter and, you know, just... anyway, I loved the guy. And
you know, when I think of a U.S. Poet or person interested in poetry listening to this,
yeah,
they're like, they never heard this name before, Al Purdy.
And no.
So how... Yeah, and the one poet that comes to mind who I would liken him to is Bukowski. Is that an accurate...
Well, yeah, they had a huge correspondence. There's a book out published back east. It's the Bukowski-Purdy Letters. And they came out of the same kind of sociology, in a sense. They were kind of anti-academic, street kind of guys, working class, and alcoholic, and chain smokers, and kind of that don't give me any bullshit stuff school of writing. And so they didn't have, although Purdy read extensively. I mean, he came on kind of as a tough guy with his sleeves rolled up, but he read everything. And D.H. Lawrence was, you know, one of his heroes, and not so much Pound and the people I was reading, but you're absolutely right. However, I didn't... Bukowski was very popular up here. The students were eating up Bukowski, but I didn't really recommend him. I thought there was a...
Nihilistic,
but more of a lifestyle-related source for the poetry. And I these kids were drinking enough up here at any rate, so why throw in another bad example for them?
Right.
And so, you know, I can see the value of Bukowski and funny and entertaining, but I could see where Purdy and Bukowski would hook up together. And it was a correspondence. There was no email in those days, and maybe they made one phone call to each other, but I don't think they ever met.
Yeah.